Student Center, and as soon as he walked back out of the door, he looked up, and to his shock, his sports car was running, you know, drifting down the road. Well, that's a problem. He threw his mail straight up in the air, of course, in his hand. He cared not for his mail anymore, and he took off like a scalded rabbit trying to run down his car. And he, you know, the car was going down the hill backwards. So he ran past the front, got all the way to the back of the car, which creates its own dangers, and he's trying to yell and scream for help, you know. It wasn't going that fast. He thought he could get behind it and just put enough pressure on it and get it to a stop. But he got back there, and he was yelling and screaming for help, and he looked down, what can I get hold of? What can I get hold of? And he looked down there, and of course, the tailpipes on this hot rodder was sticking out the back, and he said, well, that's a good handle. So he reached down and grabbed the tailpipe, and great balls of fire, you know. So that didn't work out so well. So he burned his hands, and then, of course, he's trying to find another position to grab hold of and yelling like a madman, you know, somebody come in and help him stop his sports car, you know, from crashing down below the street. In life, things just happen. I mean, I've had something similar to that happen to me years ago when I was a boy, you know, put the car in neutral, and it backed up from the little meat store that Mama was in. And then out here in the back, you know, I thought I had my truck in park, and it was actually in drive and just on a little hole. The next thing you know, I'm walking off all of this infrastructure out here, and I turn around. I'm all the way to the back, all the way to the back property, which includes those developed properties out there. So it was quite deep. And I look up, and I'm like, that truck looks like it's moving, you know. And it's over 100 yards away from me at that point, you know. And I'm like, no, it can't be. You know, I put it in park, and I looked up again, and it was moving and headed straight towards a light pole. And that was a fearful thing. So I can understand, you know, his story, but I like it. It's a wonderful story. And things just happen in life. They just happen. And they're not planned. They just happen. We live in a sin-cursed world. And probably even if we didn't, things would probably still happen. But because we do, even more things are going to happen. Things have a way of taking their twists and turns. I mean, Miss Betty, think about her. She's just in front of her stove, and all of a sudden she twists just a little bit, and down she went. And how many people do you know, especially elders, who've perfect health, and all of a sudden, you know, they take a step, and they're down. I remember a young man that I went to Bible college with, and there was a big ice storm that hit the campus, and he was walking down from the top of the hill, there, both hands in his pockets, in his coat pockets, and walking down on an icy sidewalk. And all of a sudden, his feet, instead of below him, were straight out behind him, and he did a woodpecker, Woody the Woodpecker, right on that concrete, on that ice, frozen concrete sidewalk. And I asked him later, I said, Nathan, why in the world didn't you turn your head? He said, there wasn't any time. I mean, things just happen, and they can happen so quick. And next thing you know, things have really changed. Well, if that was the worst of it, that we ended up with a broken nose or, you know, a bruised ego, I guess that wouldn't be so bad. But a lot of these things that can happen can make life change. Make life change for us and make life change for others. There's a lot of twists and turns in life. And you just never know when it's going to hit. You just never know. And then some of those, of course, those twists and turns in life, they end up causing us sleepless nights, broken homes, shattered dreams, loss of jobs, all kinds of issues, struggled relationships, divorce, harassment, child rearing issues. Things just happen these days, you know, with the wars. You just never know what's going to happen there. Next thing you know, you did something and you didn't think it was anything at all. Next thing you know, there's a gossip mill going around and you're losing your reputation. And because of this and more, things just happen. Well, in James chapter 4, we find, from whence comes wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your own lust, that war in your members? 1:14 says, but every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. But haven't you noticed, mankind, we like to pass the buck. We really don't want to be that responsible for things that happen to us. We like to try to find a scapegoat. We'd like to try to find somebody else to blame for our problems. But we are responsible not only for our actions, we're responsible even for our attitudes that we have before God. Paul wrote in Romans 14:12, so that every one of us shall give an account of himself to God. So God's not going to allow us to get away with trying to scapegoat or blame somebody else for what we are ourselves are to be really held account by God for. But we do have this problem with our flesh, and mankind doesn't like taking responsibility. Instead of looking for solutions, we try to look for, more often than not, a scapegoat, like Adam did, with Eve. Lord, it's the woman you gave me. And we have a tendency, if you would, to wear some blinders. And I love this story of Secretariat, you know, that whole horse racing story. I've watched that show 2 or 3 times. I like that show. It's a good show. And, you know, the characters that play in that. But you think about all the horses and running the races. There are good blinders and then there are bad blinders. And I think we tend, more as human beings, to wear the bad kind. Now, for the lost person, the non-Christian, they think their problem, more often than not, is a social problem. It's an economic problem. Everything's because you need more money. Or today, it's racial inequality, you know, inequalities of life. Anything but the real problem, and the real problem, of course, more often than not, is sin. It's a sin problem. The other day, I heard some people, and they were debating the problems in the black community, and they're talking about all the problems of, is just because of wealth inequality, is because they're poor. Well, years ago, they were poorer than they are today, but they didn't have near the problems that they have today. And so you have to kind of peel the onion back to find out, well, it's a little bit more than they need to make more money, and then they give them more money and give them more money and give them more money, and they just waste that money. Well, that's obviously not the solution, right? It's obviously not the solution. But that's really not the problem. Before you can get to a solution, you've got to identify the problem. And much of the problem is sin. And that's where most of our problems come from. It's sin in our own lives. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, it says, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. Now, the problem is, sinners can't see very well. You know, they've got blinders on, they've got these scales on their eyes, and they can't see very well. Now, it's kind of difficult for someone who is saved, like when I was saved at 8 years old, to have a lot of memories before I was saved. But people who were saved as adults, they have a far better understanding of what it means to have sin blinding them. I remember Brother John talking about his conversion, Brother John Atkins, and talk about how he just couldn't see. Just, you know, and like you say, well, what do you mean you couldn't see? You know, it's the understanding. His understanding is darkened. And then he says, it's like the light bulb came on. And that's what I'm talking about. People who do not know the Lord, they're in this cloud of darkness, and the light bulbs haven't come on in their life. So they just really can't see that clearly. And of course, the Bible says, you have quickened who are dead in trespasses and in sins. Of course, the wages of sin is death. Now, for the saved person, more often than not, it's a lack of understanding or a lack of application. The prophet in Hosea said that my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. So ignorance is not bliss. We need knowledge. We need understanding. But beyond that, we have to apply what we understand for it to work. I mean, it doesn't do us any good if we know how to solve the problem and we don't put forth the effort to solve the problem. We've got to actually identify the problem, and then we've got to do what needs to be done to do something about it. All right? If we're suffering from malnutrition and we realize, hey, I'm suffering from malnutrition, then we know we need to eat better. We know we need to take in different minerals, different substances, that we would get everything that we would need in our life so that we can be healthier in our bodies and in our mind, right? Because if you don't eat right, eventually it affects your mind. It really does. So in your Bibles in Ephesians chapter 6, we see here, of course, Paul writes this book, this epistle from prison, so it's called a prison epistle. And in chapter 6, look at verse, let's start in verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord. Now, the idea there is continually empowered. Now, how many of you need strength when you get up in the morning? Matter of fact, you need strength even to get up, right? All right. How many of you need strength at 11 o'clock a.m.? What about 2:30 in the afternoon? Do you need strength then? So we need strength not just to get up in the morning. We need strength all day long. All day long, we need strength in our life, and we need strength in our spirit. So here it says, be strong in the Lord, continually empowered in the power of His might, or in the dominion of His might. Put on the whole armor of God, also called the armor of light and righteousness, referring to here is putting on Christ in the Bible, that you may be able to stand against the wiles, the stuff, the things of the devil. For, because we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, many practiced, of course, witchcraft and such, but today, a lot of Christians are even playing with it. Playing with it. That's a dangerous thing to do. So it says, continue on to verse 13, wherefore, take unto you, so we have to do this, the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, above all taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. So both, all perseverance and supplication for all saints. And then he goes on, of course, and he's asking there for him on his behalf, and for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. In other words, the same empowerment you need for living the Christian life, I need to be able to do my calling. The same power. He says, here again, the last verse, for I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. So, issues take place. We don't know all the reasons why and wherefore. A lot of people spend many hours asking why. Well, a far more productive question would be, what should I do about it? Instead of just why, or why me, Lord? Why me? As long as we're into the why me mode, we hardly ever realize that there's a whole lot of people far worse off than we are. And so it just doesn't get anything much good accomplished by always the why me. More, what are you trying to teach me, Lord? Or what is it that I need to do? Or what is it that I need to do different than what I'm doing now? Because things just happen and we have to deal with it. Whether we're prepared to deal with it or not, we're going to have to deal with it. More often than not, when things happen, it surprises us. We kind of suck air for a little bit. And then we say, well, wait a minute. I've got to figure this thing out because it's not going away, right? It's not going away. I'm going to have to deal with this. I've got a health issue. My child has a health issue. My dad has a health issue. My parents have. I got a job issue over here. I got a child rearing issue over here. I got a boss over here hates my guts. I've got a subordinate over here that doesn't understand how they need to go to work just like everybody else. All these things, they just happen. The whole world is in flux, and it's happening. A lot of things are happening around us. Now, in all of our issues, Ultimately, we have to realize that we have Satan to contend with and all who follow him. And that's going to be all the evil spirits and his people. Now, number one, Satan is real. Satan is real. And he hates all people, but he especially hates God's people. But he hates all people. Some people think, you know, well, Satan's my best friend. Well, they are deceived. Satan is the friend of himself alone. He is no one's friend. He is no one's friend. He's the deceiver. He's no one's friend. So these people think, well, you know, I don't need the Lord. I mean, I've got powerful Satan on my side. Well, you are deceived. Satan is not your friend and never has been anyone's friend. He's real. And he hates all people. He hates the lost, but especially hates the saved. That's why Peter said, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. So I've said it before this way, Satan's got a bullet with your name on it. He knows exactly when to pull the trigger. We tell him by our actions. We tell him by our words. Number two, Satan is stronger than we are. You know, sometimes even preachers, you know, in their passion, they get to preaching, they're foaming at the mouth and bulging in their veins and everything, and bless God, you know, they act like they are a contender against Satan. No, we're not. No, we're not. But Jesus is. But we're not. We're not even in the same, what do you call it, the contenders, you know, they in the weight classes, what do they call them? What? Well, we're not in the same division. Okay, that's what I'm trying to... We're not even in the same division, if you would, of Satan. Satan is much stronger than us. Even Michael the archangel didn't try to go up against Satan, but said, the Lord rebuke thee in Jude 1:9. Satan, number three, is a very tricky enemy. We're hearing all this stuff about, and I hate to even use the name Epstein, but we're hearing about how depraved this man was and how he would lure in very powerful people. And now a lot of those powerful people that were lured in didn't need a whole lot of help to be lured in. A lot of those were already corrupt, and I'm not going to get into name dropping. But they've been corrupt for years and years and years, and some of them, especially coming from Arkansas, a lot of people in Dallas knew that firsthand. But we need to understand, you know, wicked people are very tricky. They spend their hours and days in counsel how to trick people and how to set people up and take people down and manipulate people. When good people are thinking about, you know, how am I going to just get up and what are we going to feed the kids tomorrow night, and I need to rewrite an insurance policy, and, you know, I got to get Billy over to the doctor's office, and Susie's got a cheerleading thing over here. That's the things good people are, they can just think about the domestic things of life. Wicked people lay awake at night spinning their webs, trying to figure out how they can take advantage of good people. And set up even wicked people. You know who take down the wicked? The more wicked than they are. And everybody's rushing to get to the bottom, and they think the bottom is the top. But Satan is a very tricky enemy. He lures his prey in, of course, seeking whom he may devour. So as a tricky enemy, he knows humanity. Then he knows us personally. And we tell him all about ourselves. And now we have social media. Boy, he couldn't wait to get a hold of social media. You want to try to find somebody's vulnerabilities, look at their social media accounts. I mean, it screams, you know, here's a ploy you could run. Here's a tactic that you could take. I mean, it just screams, you know, if they're so self-absorbed in themselves, that's overly obvious. It's easy to know. We don't have to say, you know, write a handwritten letter to Satan for him to figure out what's more likely than not to take us down. He already knows. He already knows. He's a tricky, tricky enemy. And number four, he and his spirits are invisible to boot. So it's not like when you go to the office place and you know the office clown, you know the problem maker at work, and you have them identified, right? Well, you can see them everywhere they go. You know, if you see them around, you know where they are and where they're going. If they're over here at the water cooler, or they're going down to the lunchroom or whatever the case may be, you can see them, but you can't see Satan. You can't see these wicked spirits. Now, certainly he's not omnipresent, but he's around. He's around. And then, of course, he has our own flesh as an ally to him. Our flesh. We know, Paul said, we know that is in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. So Satan has an ally even in our flesh. Now, notice a few additional things about our spiritual enemy. Number one, they are many. They are many. Well, what's worse than having one enemy? Having many enemies. That's worse. And we have many enemies. If it's been well said before, you know you know a person by their friends, but you also can know them by their enemies. And we have many enemies, spoken of here in the plural in chapter 6, verse 12, when he says principalities, power. See, that is plural. Against the rulers, plural, of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So our enemies are many, and not only that, they're spoken of here as powerful. Powerful. The Bible talks about here, but indicated by the word, of course, that we are wrestling. We are wrestling. This isn't just about a little, a lightweight arm wrestling thing. Man, they're trying to take us out. And they're trying to take our marriage out. They're trying to take our children out. They're trying to take our grandchildren out. They're trying to take our church out. And on it goes. So they are spoken of as powerful. And then they're spoken of, number three, as agents of darkness. You know, some of these guys don't even believe evil exists. Well, how can you not believe evil exists when you see it every day? Every day you see people taking advantage of other people and being hurtful and mean-spirited. And I'm not talking about all the other smut of the world. You know, we shouldn't even have to mention those things. I mean, can you imagine what took place with children in that place over there? With little girls. You know, I don't want to get too graphic with this. What took place with Israel and all the people that they took hostage, and some of those were women, elder women, and little girls. Little girls. Unthinkable. How can you just even imagine there's no evil in this world when you see it in the raw, man? It's wicked. That's wicked. Now, these powers involve intellectual powers, physical powers, powers directed and collective, powers unrelenting. They'll never give up, and they never have to rest. Spirit beings don't have to rest. We get tired. We have to rest. We need to go to sleep, and we go to sleep, and we pray, you know, for the Lord to take care of us, and we go to sleep. But those spirit beings, they don't sleep. They're still fighting right on. Right on. So they use every form of wickedness to bring about the destruction of men, women, boys, and girls. No trick is too dirty for them. No trick is too dirty. I've told you before about me wrestling my big brother, you know, my big brother who can be quite mean. And of course, finally I had beefed up, man, and I mean, I had a six-pack stomach, and I was working out, and I was working hard on those freight dogs, and I was in really, really good shape, and I knew, boy, when I go back to Florida this time, I'm going to take my big brother down. Now, that's the aspiration of every little brother. It really don't care where you're from. That's what you want to do, is be able to take your big brother down. Daddy, you have too much respect for him, but brothers, they don't get as much respect. I'm going to take my big brother down. So I told him, I said, you know, I'm going to take you down, Mama. So we started in the living room. Mama said, yo, get out in the backyard. We decided the front yard would be better, more grass and all out there. So we ended up in the front yard. We're wrestling around there. Man, I got him down, and I had him in a headlock of all headlocks. And I'll tell you, I was pretty strong at that time. And I mean, it looked like his head was just going to pop right off his shoulders. And I got you. And I had him leveraged up there. You know, he couldn't do much of anything. And he said, no, you don't. No, you don't. You know, I mean, I had him. I mean, I'm cutting off the air. He's the blood flow. He's about to go out. I got you. No, you don't. And he reached around and grabbed me in the mouth right there. Hooked that finger in my mouth and about ripped my jaw apart. Well, of course, I let go. And I screamed. You said you screamed? Yeah, not like a girl, but I screamed. It hurt. And I thought he had ripped my jaw apart. I mean, it definitely tore, all right? But I thought, man, he's just ripped my face off, you know? And I'm like, Mike, that hurt. Like I did what hurt him. I got you. Now you know. You know, one of those. And he just let me have it. And I said, Mike, you're not supposed to do it like that. You know? He said, let that be a lesson to you, little brother. It's the guy that doesn't care. It's the guy that doesn't care. Well, they don't care. They don't care if you have to have surgery. They don't care if you're marked and emotionally scarred for the rest of your life. They don't care about your children. They don't care about your marriage. They don't care even about your little grandbaby. They don't care about that. They care about their agenda and following the satanic rule. That's what they care about. And we, as Christians, we have a sense just, well, they're really not that bad. No, they really are. They really are that bad. And they'll do you great, great damage. I'm a firm believer that Satan knows how much of himself he can reveal. If you go to other nations, you'll see depravity like you've never known in your life. You'll see wickedness. You'll see witchcraft like you've never seen in your life when you go to other countries. And people say those things don't exist here. No, they do. But Satan knows just how much of himself he can reveal. I believe because revival would take place. Look what happened after 9/11 in our country. We had all these, you know, congressmen, all these people out on the steps of the Capitol in Washington singing God Bless America. And some of those guys are the biggest crooks in the nation. See? So if you have a certain amount of attack against you, it has a tendency to bring the fear of God in your life and revival. So Satan knows just how much of himself that he can reveal. But there is no scheme that's too sordid for him and his alike. Verse 13 says, wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. Now two parts are mentioned here, to withstand and to stand. So the Christian life involves both a good defense and a good offense, right? It involves both. It's not like most of Christian life and Christian debates. We get into it has to be either or. Many times it's not either or, it's both. It's both. And you just can't, you know, be on the offensive all the time and win a ball game. You also have to have a good defense. You got to run the good defense. You got to run a good offense if you're going to win some ball games. Same thing in our spiritual life and spiritual battles. Now, the time of this understanding, withstanding, standing and withstanding, is referred to as the evil day. As the evil day. In the day of temptation, because the days are evil, you see in Ephesians 5, 16. Now, in a more limited sense, that would be a day, one day. But you put 2 days together, now that's days. That's a season. Right? Now, how many of your trials that you face, you know, or satanic attacks that you've had to go through in your lives or in your family, how many of them lasted just for a day? Some. How many of them lasted for more than one day? Well, that's a season. That's a season. What I find is normally the larger attacks, we're going to at least be dealing with those things for a season, not a day. You follow me? It's going to be a season. It's going to be more than one day, but a season is nothing more but the plurality of a day. It's just a season. Now, it's higher, if you would, these days or seasons. More often than not, it can be a day, but more often than not, it's a season. Are great times of pivot or changes in our lives. Most of our life's decisions are not made in large blocks of time, but in smaller portions of seasons. We make up our mind, am I going to raise my child like this? What am I going to sacrifice? What am I going to compromise? And we go through that season of life that we're trying to work it all out, sort it all out, husband, wife, whatever the case may be, and we come up with a decision. And that decision has great ramifications in our lives. Or we decide, am I going to be this kind of wife or am I going to be that kind of wife? Or am I going to be this kind of husband or am I going to be that kind of husband? And that type of decision just doesn't normally happen in 1 hour of our life. You follow me? That's usually a series of days, a season in our life that we're trying to figure out what kind of husband, what kind of wife, what kind of grandparent do I really want to be? What do I believe God would have me to be, and do I have the strength to actually get the job done? So seasons. And next thing you know, our lives are drastically changed. Now, it is true that many times lives are changed in 1 minute. One decision in 1 minute. But more often than not, it's a longer durations. It's longer periods of time. And those decisions are great pivot points in our lives. And it has either good effects or, of course, very bad effects in our life. I've seen so many believers lose their total direction in life through the years. And many Christians are short-sighted. I was talking, just yesterday, Brother Colt, about pastoral ministry and training. And you just have to think more long-term on major decisions. And you're wiser if you do so. When people say, well, where do you see yourself in a year? Well, it seems like just a few days ago, we were at this time last year. So I'm not really working so much on years now. I'm working more on decades. Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Where do you see yourself in 30 years? We're doing, Brother Daniel's a great help. He can do more research and all on that computer and type it all up faster than probably all of us combined here, you know, at the church. And doing research and trying to look at a radius, you know, of consideration of perhaps planning a church and the demographic studies, you know, of regions. Out 350 miles, with the hub being around the Fort Smith, Arkansas. I think that was the hub that we kind of determined. Brother Colt's desire, of course, is he would like, if it be the Lord's will, if it pleased the Lord, he's willing to go anywhere. But if it would please the Lord, that he could be at least one full day driving distance from both their families, if that would be pleasing to the Lord. Now, don't hold me to that, because he's willing to go wherever. So that's where we're starting, and we're doing a lot of research trying to figure all of that out. But there's a lot of discernment that has to go into it. You have decaying cities. You have cities that are ill-run. Now, I know the darker the night, the brighter the light. I get it. But we're not looking. It's sort of like with what we went through with Winsboro, okay? We're not looking at a one-year window. We're not looking at a five-year window. If the Lord tarries his coming, we're looking at a 30-year window. Minimum. He's about 30 years old. So minimum outlook, what we're looking at, minimum outlook, is what's going to happen to that city, what's going to happen to that town, what's happening in the economics, what's happening politically in that town with a 30-year outlook. You say, well, that's crazy. No, it's not. No, it's not. Not long ago, I was doing some research and I was talking to a pastor, and he's the pastor of a missionary, and he was actually in Lebanon, I believe it was. And I was talking to him, and he said, well, yeah, he's having some pretty good success winning Muslim people there around him, you know, to the Lord. I said, well, that's wonderful. But let me ask you a question. Who exactly is he winning over? And this is what he said. Why does that matter? And I said, well, it does. I'm sorry if maybe I need to help you understand what I'm trying to find out, but I'm trying to peel back the onion. I'm trying to dig into the research and find the layers down below the things that are on the surface, which lead you to conclude, what does it matter? Well, if you just answer my question, I'll show you what it matters. And he said, well, okay. I said, well, who are they? Who are they? And he said, well, they're mostly Syrians. I said, you mean the Syrian refugees? Well, yeah, the refugees. Well, that makes a huge difference. The Syrian refugees are scattering all over that part of the known world, and they don't even know what they're going to have to eat tomorrow. But you're not likely to build a stable, long-term, 30-year ministry on Syrian refugees. Okay, and if you want to go to a mission field and you want to have a 30-year outlook, you need to understand what's going on in the region. And if you're going to try to build a house on the sand, don't be surprised when it goes squash. You know, it's that y'all teach the little ones. So we're looking at, we need information, we need knowledge, we need understanding. We need to know how to apply these things in our lives to escape the negative things that we want to escape and to get the things, the blessings of God that we want to do. And many times it comes down to decisions. I went through something very similar with Brother Ben years ago. Preacher wanted him to come down south of here and come to work for him down there. And I said, well, that's all fine. Let's talk about it. Well, I want him to come down, and maybe in about 2 years, and he was salvaging a church. Maybe in about 2 years, if all things go well and I think he's worthy, then we'll go ahead and appoint him as pastor of this church. And I said, well, why should he leave a paying staff job to take a non-paying staff job? And maybe in 2 years, if he suits your fancy, then you will appoint him as a potentate to be pastor of that church. Why would he do that? Well, we're not into playing games here. We're trying to figure out what is a wise decision for our people. And if it's not a wise decision, if it's not going to lead to a prospect of good things taking place in the future, then count me out. Count me out. I'm not in for failure's sake. Does that make sense? And so there's so many things in life that pivots. And we've got to be careful in those pivoting times to realize the dangers that are out there. Because, you know, somebody says, well, it sounds good. Well, a lot of things sound good, but they're not necessarily good. And we have to get a little bit deeper than that. So, we don't need to be short-sighted. Now we see here, letter A, a mandate to stand. The imperative stand means urgency and a militancy. To stand, not just stand, but to stand with a stance that would be well anchored and well positioned to be able to withstand blows. When we went over just to the hospital over there in Plano, you know, I told Brother Colton, we come out of there. Miss Betty said she was in the heart hospital. She's not. She's in the other one over there on Preston Road. And we come out of there, and it was like we're in a wind tunnel. And I'm walking alone there, you know, and I'm not quite as light as Brother Colton. And I'm walking, and all of a sudden, I lifted up this leg to put it in front of the other one, and that leg kicked me in the back of the calf. The wind blew my leg over behind my other leg. And I thought, what's going on with that? And I told Nicole, I said, you better be careful. Well, if it got me like that, what's it going to do to you? And I knew the wind was blowing because when I left the house that morning, I noticed down there there's a tire shop and the whole roof is blown. Whole roof is blown off that thing. And I noticed when they put the thing up, they were going real quick. And I had my doubts about it then, about the shoddiness of their construction, and I think that's now been confirmed. But it happens, and so when we get into a stance, We don't need to be, you know, you ever seen those old shows, you know, the Zulus and all those kind of, you know, they're standing there with their sword in their hand and they prop their leg up like that and they're just standing there like a parakeet or something, you know. You know what I'm talking about? Huh? A flamingo. Yeah, a flamingo. Yeah, that bird. It's the wrong bird. A little bit bigger bird. You know, it wouldn't take a whole lot to knock a guy down who's standing there like that. Right? And that's what I find a lot of Christians are doing. The way they're standing is like that. And you just stand like that just for a minute. How long can you do it? You want to do an object lesson? How long can you do it? You're vulnerable, right? You're vulnerable. Well, a lot of Christians, the way they're standing, the way they're walking in the Lord, they're vulnerable. They're not standing firm. If you expect to have resistance, what do you normally do? You kind of spread your legs out a little bit, right? You kind of crouch down a little bit. Now, I'm not suggesting you walk around like that. Everybody think you're President Biden. But I'm saying, if you know that in your walk you're going to have some resistance, you better walk with a little bit more stability in mind, knowing that the winds are going to blow. Because they will blow. It's not a question of if. It's like, you know, Donnie Gay said years ago about riding bulls. It's not a question if you will get hurt. It's when will you get hurt. And you're going to get hurt. In this world, you're going to get hurt. And so many Christians, as soon as they get hurt, they're down, man. They're down. I mean, start the count. They're down. And many of them never get back up. They never get back up. Just lately, I was reminded again with another preacher who's now no more in the gospel ministry. Went down. Another man. That's a church planter, by the way, that we used to support years ago. Another man who's another one of those church planters, he didn't go down, his wife went down. You know, if mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. He's out of the ministry too. What's going on? Not standing right. Not expecting resistance. Remember I talked about the church I was raised up in, and, you know, being the pianist child, you heard all the scuttlebutt, you know, or quite a bit of it. And you heard about, you know, people talking ugly about their preacher. I heard a lot of that. It helped that I was crawling underneath the pews at choir practice, you know. Anybody standing around, boy, you just really got your ears full. And I knew going in that it's going to be a battle. And it's one of the reasons I didn't really want to do it. I wanted to see our country. I knew I'd probably never see the country. If I'm going to be in the ministry, I'm going to be treated just like that preacher. And that's all I ever knew. So was it limited? Yes. Was it ignorant? Yes, to a great extent. Yes, it was. But that's all that I knew. But when I went in, I knew I'd be going in for a fight. Now, I've been in. Well, I've got some experience in that. You better learn how to take a hit and keep going. Because if you think, well, I'm going to be in this fight and I'm going to win and I'm never going to get hit, you probably haven't been in too many fights. Sometimes you get the first one in, but you don't always get all of them in. But in our Christian life, we think, well, I'm going to be in a fight and I'm never going to get hit. My family's never going to get hit. My marriage is never going to get hit. My children are never going to get hit. You live in a fairy tale land. We are in for a fight. And you will get hit. I've said before, you know, in a fight, a lot of people, as soon as they see their blood, they're done. Some people say, I can't stand the sight of blood, especially my own. Well, I can understand that, you know. But if you're in a fight, it doesn't take much at all to get a little blood. I mean, you can be in just a little disagreement with a little girl, and she scratches you and you get some blood. much less a grown man or a grown woman. If you don't think a woman can make you bleed, you are mistaken. They scratch your eyeballs out. I mean, listen, my sister was one of the best fighters I knew in all of our county back home. Little bitty angel. Twice I saw her whip two guys, different guys at different times, but two separate occasions. One of them, she beat a guy down in the ditch, a bar ditch, like a windmill. Just pep, 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 and just kept going. And she could keep going because she went to the house and changed from her little country dress to put on some jeans so she could really get to it. But he had said something ugly to her. And she's going to set the record straight. You're not going to talk to me like that. So half the school was out there in front of his little trailer house. And they lived back behind us. Now, that's kind of not a road back, but it's kind of country roads back, you know. 2+ acres, you know, back behind us. And half the school seems like out in front of his trailer house over there. And here's my sister. Now she's changed clothes. And now half the school knows about what's going down. They didn't get on the bus. They cut through the woods and come to that place over there. They heard what's going on. They would just skip school for all kinds of stuff back there. The next thing you know, I'm not coming out there. I'm not going to hit a girl. She said, come out and take it like a man. And as soon as he crossed the threshold of that easement out on that county road, she led into him and beat him down like a rag. Well, I'm here to tell you, he was bloody. He was bloody. But we think Christianity, well, I've got this little sterile idea of what a fight is going to be like. That's why sometimes, and I don't mean to suggest that you go out and you get in fist fights. That's not what I'm trying to convey to your children. But I do think if you've ever been in some kind of a scuffle, you have a better idea of what I'm talking about, and you have a better chance of really resisting and walking as you should, knowing how to take a licking and keep ticking. Because a lot of Christians, they get hit and just one time and they're down. They're down. Well, you can be down, but you don't have to stay down. You can rise again. A just man will get up. As a matter of fact, being the fact that you've been put down should give you a little bit more of an urge to get back up. What is it Rocky would say? One more round. Okay, you got me with a good one. Man, I had a guy, man, he got me with a good one one day. But one's not going to do the job. I'm too hard ahead for that. You're going to have to get several of those in, all right? I remember playing football, and I went out, and then I was going to hit this guy, and he's a big old Georgia boy. Boy, and I tell you, he come through that line, and I hit him, big old fullback. Man, I hit him head to head. That was one of the times I cracked my helmet. Hit him head to head. I ended up, it seemed like 10 yards back that way. He went down, but he just went down right there. But he rocked my world. Now, I can sit and I can say, man alive, coach, I probably have a concussion. I probably did. But we didn't play like that during those days. Everything was about get back up and go to it again. Now, did he knock me flat? Oh, yeah, he was more than twice my size. He really was. And he really rocked my world. It hurt. It hurt a lot. I got hit in the side one time by Terrence Flagler, and he went on to play college ball and then went on to NFL and played for Dallas, played for Philadelphia, and played for the 49ers. With all the money he made, he built his daddy. His daddy was a Black Baptist preacher in Fernandina Beach, Florida, and he built a whole new building, church building, for his daddy by his money he made off NFL. But Terrence hit me one time. I went out at the end of the football season in our little junior high, and I was in ninth grade, and I'd run a slant route. Eventually those other guys don't want that ball no more. And I was always just fast enough to get into the running back category, and I'd end up carrying the ball at the end of the season. Well, I'm going out for a pass, and I catch a slant pass, man, and he nails me in the side, and it felt like a freight train had hit me. I mean, he hit me hard. And I thought, ooh, I just don't know if I'm going to be able to get back up. But something else says, get up. Get up. Having done all to stand. Now, those lessons in life served me well. They did. They served me well. Painful? Yes. Very painful. It hurt. But you get back up. We've got a list of things we have to do here to stay standing or to get back up and yet stand again. And the things, you know, the shield of faith and all the list that's given there, and I'm out of time to go through that. But I want to urge you. We're nearing the time of our Lord. I believe that. I believe that. And the pains, the shots, are going to come more often. And they're going to hurt. Are you going to be the type of Christian? Just one shot and you're down? Now, most in this room, you've already proven that's not you. But you know as well as I am, there's been a lot of people, members of this same church. It doesn't take much to put them out. And they're down. Maybe they'll rise again. Maybe they won't. We don't know. We need to be better prepared. Because what we're in is a spiritual battle. And you better be ready to take some hits. Or you will be the next one on the sideline. How does it make you feel? Knowing you can, you say, well, not me. Oh, that's dangerous. Yeah, it can be you. Of God. Well, I guess Brother James said that's enough. Let's stand. You turn my mic off.